We have 30 supervisors present. That's a quorum. I will call us to order and ask us to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. Under the County Board Chair's report, I want to extend my apologies right up front that Chairman Doyle wasn't able to be here. He, along with Supervisor Burns, was hoping that the meeting would be at 6 o'clock tonight. He's got a trial to conduct today during the day, so we will do our best in his absence. Beginning with conference reports from supervisors, starting with Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Okay, you were supposed to have a two-page handout on your desk, but you don't. All you have is this serving size card. That's off the CDC website. So I will tell you what is on the two-page report. You won't have to read it. I missed the county board meeting in June, and for those of you who think I was on vacation, I actually was at a national summit on legal preparedness for obesity prevention and control. This was put on by CDC in Atlanta. And there were public health organizations there and people from universities and legislators. And the purpose was to come up with a national action plan for preventing and controlling obesity. In the last 20 years, obesity has become an epidemic. One-third of American adults are overweight or obese, me among them. Up to 25% of American children are overweight and obese. And in the paper yesterday, there was a short article about teens and how they're becoming more and more overweight and less active. So this map, did it start already? Okay, this map shows the United States and levels of obesity, and it changes from 1980, it's up to 1990. The darker the colors get, the more obese they are. And then in around 1995 or 6, they had to come up with a new color because they were more obese than that. And then in 2001, yet another color. And that's where we are in 2006. So the red is the most obese. It started out with some white and light blue, and then went through the dark blues, yellow, and orange. And actually, there's a red down there in Mississippi. So it truly is. It's not just people are getting a little overweight. It truly is an epidemic. So we need to treat it like an epidemic and take a population view and not just think of it as individual choice. We live in a supersized society where cheap and fattening food is readily available and heavily marketed. Remember when McDonald's had just three items, hamburger, cheeseburger, and fries, and all of them came in one size, and now those are on the children's menu. So we haven't changed, food has changed. And it's too easy to eat too much, and it's harder to get fresh, healthy food. So here's some examples of what we can do that will be in the National Action Plan. For schools, they can look at cafeteria selections, vending machines, physical education requirements, and encouraging kids to walk to school. In daycares, there can be regulations for the amount of time spent watching TV, and there can be meal requirements. Employers and health insurers can offer incentives in health insurance, such as paying for weight loss programs and treatments and membership in health clubs. Food marketers could cooperate by labeling food and menu labeling more honestly than they do, change their portion sizes, and don't use trans fat in cooking. It's like lead in paint. It's dangerous and no one will miss it. In zoning and planning, we can require sidewalks in new residential districts, and we can plan for grocery and other stores in residential neighborhoods so people will walk more than they do drive. We've used similar approaches in other areas like immunizations, lead poisoning, tobacco control, and emergency preparedness. Now, in the health department here in La Crosse, these are the things that we're doing. There's a childhood obesity coalition with healthcare professionals, educators, community organizations, and individuals. And they do things like turn off the TV challenge, school health fairs, and walk to school challenges. There's another program called Fit Families for parents of 2 to 3 year olds who qualify for WIC. We have 80 families in that, and the family sets a goal, and a nutritionist helps them achieve that goal. Healthy Living for a Lifetime is another program that's open to the public. Educational sessions on nutrition, preventing cancer, cooking healthy, wellness challenges like New Year's resolutions, Walk Across Wisconsin, and the Fall 30 Challenge. The fourth program is the Pioneering Healthy Communities, which is also spearheaded by the YMCA, and this is a national program, and we do have it here. So it's an effort to change community environment. They're encouraging Quick Trip and Stansfield vending to offer healthier choices, and the nutrition division has booths at farmers markets. Safe Routes to School, which you all voted for, is another program. 4 schools in La Crosse, 1 in Onalaska. 2 more are going to be added in Onalaska soon. And they have planning groups in Holman and West Salem. And finally, La Crosse Breastfeeding Coalition promotes breastfeeding as the norm and encourages mothers to breastfeed and works with employers to support their efforts. And in terms of our county health insurance plan, nothing. Nothing whatever. They don't cover dietitian visits, they don't cover weight loss programs, so there's an area we could improve. So anyway, we're on the right track, and we need to keep working on it. The serving size card, you're supposed to laminate it and carry it with you forever, but that helps you see the size of portions that you're really supposed to be aiming for. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Hampson. I know there are a number of announcements. Is there any other report from a conference? Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. I attended, along with some other people here, the La Crosse County 19th Annual Disposal System meeting Thursday, July 10th. We had it down at La Crosse Center. We had reports by XL Energy. XL Energy, as you know, is our waste-to-energy program that's over here in French Island. And Tina Ball gave a talk on that. And XL Energy right now, and I'm sure most of you people will be happy to know that they're at the lowest level that they ever have been as far as things that are coming out of the stack. And people that live north and east of that thing are under the plume of it. So that was really glad. I was glad to hear. Brian Tippett gave a review of what's happened over the year in the disposal in our disposal site out here, and also our featured speaker was Jerry O'Brien. And this is something that may be happening with waste collection in the future. As you know, parts of La Crosse County don't recycle plastics. What he's proposing, along with other people, is having a single stream of garbage, and it all is picked up by the same kind of truck, all picked up out of the same kind of container, so that there's no handling it by hand. It's just handled by these trucks. It's picked up, put into the waste stream, and everything's sorted that way. And this, hopefully, it sounds like the way to go and might be the wave of the future. If you want to know more about it, contact Brian Tippett. I'm sure he's got a lot more to say about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Schrader. You want to just go ahead and keep the floor and make the announcement that you wanted to make?
Well, thank you. Yes. Hopefully you've heard about the Freedom Honor Flight, which is being instituted here in La Crosse. It's the first time it's been done in the state of Wisconsin. And what we're trying to do is send the World War II vets to Washington, D.C., to view their memorial, which was, it hasn't been in place that long. And these people are leaving us, at the rate of anywhere, well, there's different figures, but anywhere it's over 1,000 people a day, these World War II veterans are passing on. And what we plan to do is have an honor flight out of La Crosse October 8th. We're looking for sponsors for vets. We're looking for donations. There's room for guardians. There's room for a lot of people to do some volunteer work with this. And if you go onto the website, that Freedom Ring, where the info, freedomhonorflight.org, it's a very good program. If you know anyone that's a World War II vet, please have them see one of the officers to get an application form, and I can help you with that if you need some application forms. But we're doing this within a 120-mile radius of La Crosse, and I'm hoping that you can pass the word on and possibly get some of the people that you know or someone to participate in this.
And do you have additional brochures if here.
I do not with me.
But you could help them find.
Yes, I can
ones.
Help them find the brochures. I can help them get registered. I can help them with volunteer programs.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a Southwest ITBEC, we had a one-day retreat in Tolma in a June meeting, and what we decided there was that we were trying to do too many things at one time, and so we decided to tack by order of importance one thing at a time. So that's pretty much what we decided at that meeting. And then on August 5th and 6th, La Crosse representatives from ITBEC will be at Lac de Flambeau. And this year's conference will feature Professor Kelly Kane of UW River Falls, who will be speaking about elephants in the room. This presentation combines elephant scale data and trend analysis of the global ecological and economic conditions we face. In contrast with the elephant scale, choices we need to make in professional and civic life. And then in September 10, 11, 12, we'll be at the Northern Networks Conference in Duluth. That'll be Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Canada. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sobranek. There are copies of the Carey Report for newly elected county board supervisors who may not have gotten a copy. And Jane Claycamp can make arrangements for any other copies if folks need it. So if you pick one of those up after the meeting, that would be great. Supervisor Bina has a reminder for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you know, there's a schedule on your desk about the fair taking place this week. It started yesterday, and it will go till Sunday night. There's a lot of activities, although yesterday was the kids' ride day for a buck, and that's over, and we probably got rained out toward the end of the day.
Does anyone in this room qualify for that, or would you have qualified?
Well, you got to have an ID card for that, so... But we have all kinds of things going on. We got horse pulls, we got two car races, we got animals of all kinds at the fair that the kids are presenting to you for looking over. We have a brand new horse barn on the fairgrounds now. It houses horses and goats. As I said earlier, the snow took the roof in last winter, and we had to build a new facility, and at the tune of about $179,000. So take a look at some of the new stuff we have. Saturday evening, we have a livestock sale that the kids are selling starting at 6 o'clock. And you'd be interested in either bidding on an animal and putting it in your freezer or something. There's no cost for parking and no cost for entry to the ground, so it's a kind of a freebie. So anytime you get a little time this week, go out to the fair, and we'd appreciate seeing you out there.
Thank you, Supervisor Bina. Speaking of the fair, I have an announcement from Chairman Doyle that all county board members and others are invited to be at the fair at 6 o'clock Friday evening. to cheer on Chairman Doyle as he represents the county in the highly competitive, much anticipated goat milking contest. Also competing will be representatives from 4-H, Gunderson Lutheran, Franciscan Skemp Healthcare, Channel 8, Channel 19, the People's Food Co-op, and Brennigan Automotive. And you are encouraged to place your bets on your predicted winner. All proceeds will go to 4-H programs in La Crosse County, and Chairman Doyle will be competing to uphold the county's motto, "We milk goats, not taxpayers." I just read what I'm given, folks. Sorry. I just read what I'm given. Reminder also that the WCA conference, October 12th, 13th, and 14th, if you are planning on attending, you need to sign up with Cheryl up in the chairman's office before September 5th. Gary, administrator's report, please.
Yeah, I just want to remind folks that Steve is on his yearly Habitat for Humanity bike ride this week, so I'm filling in on the administrator's report. Two items on the report. The first item is the funeral home fraud case. Certainly, I'm sure all of you have read about that in the newspaper. We wanted to provide you with a little bit more background and insight. So on your desk, possibly some of you have already read it, there's a memo prepared by Jerry Huber, Lori Mueller, and also Tom Miller, from the economic support section. The bottom line as far as La Crosse County's liability in the case is, even though we incurred about $5,000 of expense, we will be reimbursed for that. The investigation was conducted primarily by the state and the Department of Justice. Dave Lang was also involved here locally. If any of you have any specific questions, we do have Tom Miller and Lori Mueller here. I'm sure they would be happy to respond to any questions you have.
Supervisor Mettinger.
These fraudulent claims, did we just do a sample of some of their submittals, or did we go through them all? The state, I mean, the investigators.
Tom or Lori, do you have an answer to that question?
If you could come up to the microphone, please, Tom.
The Department of Justice came in and took all of our funeral home files from Dickinson Funeral Home from 2003 through 2006. So all of their files from that were submitted were investigated.
So you think the total amount of the fraud was these $55,000? It wasn't?
From state money and county money, correct.
Okay.
Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you. Is it true, then, that the people that were ripped off by Dickinson's have not had any restitution?
They only investigated what the state lost in money.
Okay, so
I mean, there's been no charges that the people didn't get the services that they actually paid for.
Right, but they were eligible to have county state money towards that funeral, and in the end, they had to pay it out of their own pockets.
Correct. They were so potentially eligible.
Right.
Yes.
So is there any chance there's something that can be done for them?
They would have to file up
a civil lawsuit. Civil suit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a shame that he hasn't reimbursed them.
Supervisor Cotter.
That was mostly my question, too. And since technically the money would have offset the private people's expenses anyway, should we just pocket it, or should we distribute it back to the people? It's a hornet's nest, but
Bill, do you want to try that one?
I would suggest that you not consider that. That would be to open that would be difficult. I think they're more than the two claims that he is pleading guilty to. The criminal complaint lists about 25, I believe.
And the county's only getting $5,000 back. The rest goes to the state of Wisconsin.
Oh,
so
okay.
We would have no control over that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Billings.
Thank you. There, in the last few years, the Health and Human Services Board had to take money out of the general fund. to because there were overruns in that budget line. So will that money go back into the Human Services General Fund?
Yeah, this $5,000 reimbursement will definitely stay within the Human Services Fund.
Supervisor Veenstra.
Not to belabor this, but the individuals who are harmed, I assume, are in the read-ins. There are multiple read-ins on the criminal case, and those people, just so you know, assuming that they contacted the DA's office, would be eligible for restitution on any read-in count, and that is through the function of the victim witness coordinator in the district attorney's office. So if anybody complains to a supervisor, they should lead them to the DA's office.
Thank you. Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How was the 2003 year derived from? Shouldn't it maybe have gone back further than that?
That's as far back as they could. I think it was the statute of limitations that
5 years
went that far back.
Is that correct?
Bill?
That's what...
I don't know offhand why they selected that particular date. I see that there is one that goes back to October 17th of 2002, so... I would guess there's probably a 6-year statute that was in play, but I don't practice criminal law, so maybe
okay.
Mr. Veenstra knows more than I do on the statute regarding that. But this was totally within handled by the Wisconsin Department of Justice. I don't think that the DA had anything to do with the investigation, nor the plea agreement, nor any of the charges that were brought against the parties.
And there were no other funeral homes evidently involved with that type of billing?
It was only this one funeral home that was charged.
Okay, thank you.
Here, you have any other questions on this item?
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Lori, for being here.
The next item on the administrative report, actually, I have a prepared statement here from Steve O'Malley, and we know I'm a man of few words, but Steve's a man of several words, so let's make sure I get all of his words in. In regard to the Park Plaza, just want to give you a little update. Under the direction of the City Redevelopment Authority, the city has been working on the terms for a developer's agreement with Progressive Designs, LLC of Madison. The agreement will define the estimated market value and type of structures to be completed in the development, along with the required steps of due diligence by the developer, including specific timelines. Other issues being addressed include the use of TIF, the effect on surrounding landowners, and other specific steps necessary to protect the city and county. The county board chair and the administrator will be meeting with the mayor and the city planner later this month to get a more detailed update on the terms of this agreement. In particular, we need to communicate that the county is not satisfied with the lack of progress on developing Park Plaza, and as a result, may need to reconsider any and all steps to move this process forward by taking a more active role in marketing the vacant county land to any interested party. I'm not sure that you have any questions. If you do, unfortunately, we do have some city supervisors here if they might know a bit more information.
So we'll take our best shot at answering them. Supervisor Ebert.
To the best of your knowledge, what do we have in it excluding interest and penalties? Don't we, the taxes plus we paid something to rip it down or something?
It's approximately $1 million.
That the county has into it.
Thank you, sir.
Supervisor Schrader.
Can you tell me who Progressive Designs, who the people are behind the name?
I believe Audrey might be able to provide some information on that.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. Since I serve on the Redevelopment Authority, I have reasonable information in relation to it. It's a company out of Madison. The guy's name right now, I can't think of it. But it was in response to an RFP that was sent out a couple of years ago. Part of the reasons for the delay too are in relation to the sewer and water that was supposed to be installed from La Crescent to La Crosse, not at the City of La Crosse's expense. And unfortunately, the contractor on that contract screwed up royally, is the best way to put it. And it didn't. He only did part of the sewer and got fired, and none of the water was done. And water is an important part of that particular development, to have city water available to Park Plaza. We really have been working on it. There are other constraints to issues that are being dealt with, which I'm sure Mr. O'Malley and Mr. Doyle will hear about when they meet. Since negotiations are continuing in relation to it, it cannot be public information at this stage. But then Nick is the guy's name. He was to have an answer for us prior to last week's Redevelopment Authority meeting, but he had a family death, and so we didn't get the response. But we are putting the pressure on them to shape up or ship out.
Supervisor Schrader, that was originally your question about who was involved in that. Did that answer your question? Do you have any other questions that you'd like to try to get an answer to? Anybody else? Supervisor Meyer.
Probably no one's asked Steve O'Malley about this particular project more than I have. And I guess I'd like to know from Audrey, what does shape up or ship out mean since we've been dealing with this? I have a report on my desk right here from 2005. And we've really done nothing. It's just aggravating. What I hear about the fellow from Madison is really not that reliable. Can you answer any of those, Audrey, without divulging any confidential things?
All I can say is that the process, you have to honor the parameters of the process. He legitimately was the only developer, actually, at the time. And that's a big piece of it is the current economy. And it is a wonderful site, in my opinion, but the developers are not breaking down our doors to come and develop it. And I would remind us all, that those of us who were here and those who were not here, when the county was attempting to deal with it, it wasn't that easy either. So all I can do is assure you that the Redevelopment Authority has really made it its number one priority to get this moving.
At the risk of
humor
again, did that answer your question, Supervisor Meyer?
I heard, I don't know who it was on the Redevelopment Authority said, well, there's really no urgency to it. And I just went through the car radio and I heard that. Because to me, there is urgency to it to get this back on the tax rolls and get it rolling. That's
the Redevelopment Authority made a motion to make it a top priority. So whoever said that...
And that was the action that you took last week? At that meeting?
No, several, at least 6 months ago.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Well, I almost hesitate to talk about this subject because it's something I know a little about and that always gets you in trouble, but I'm intrigued that the news media hasn't really been telling us about these sewer and water problems that the city's been having, trying to get water across there and developments and pipes bobbing in the Mississippi River. You know, I just don't know how it got all screwed up. And it'd be interesting to find that out. And then there's been this new court decision that I think probably would apply to LADCO, which nobody's really explained around here about how economic development arms are now supposed to be quasi-public meetings with meeting notices and tell us what's going on, because all this stuff is done behind closed doors. And then it's a done deal when they open the door, and then you're supposed to vote yes. And then the public is kind of left out in the dark. And these quasi-developmental organizations that are funded by partly art, we put money into LADCO, don't we?
Yes.
And also the Redevelopment Authority. Everything's done behind closed doors, and then it's a done deal, and then everybody votes yes. And the process, I think, needs to have more public scrutiny, because not only is the county supervisors a little bit in the dark, but the public's left in the dark on these things. And it's just kind of a general comment. I don't want people to start hollering and screaming, but it's not exactly the way it's supposed to work.
Supervisor Schrader.
I guess I share some of the same frustrations as Mr. Meyer, Mr. Mettinger, because they did have a developer for this site. This was, I believe, before we gave it over to the Redevelopment Authority, or maybe it was just after. I can't remember the timeline. But there was quite a few years that this thing could have, we would have had our money back. There would have been something on there, been paying taxes, and the Redevelopment Authority, my way of thinking, has been dragging their feet.
Gary, I'm assuming you'll be taking all of these comments back to the person whose comments you read from. Very
certainly.
Did a fine job of reading from those. Any other supervisor who hasn't been heard on this issue? Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing that for the new supervisors is, and this is really water over a dam, is there was nine of us that voted to sell it to a private enterprise, and that we were promised a lot of different things, and I don't think anyone has lived up to those promises, and it's unfortunate that we didn't take the steps, because now we are into it for more with the $1 million that we took action, the asbestos removal and tearing down the buildings and everything. So we're in deeper than we were before. I think the nine that voted the other way were willing to, we knew we would have the delinquent property taxes and that, but as you can see today, there'd be another piece of property we'd be selling, which is very much smaller than that, that we agree to do that. And it's unfortunate we didn't do it at time, although the sum of money was great on real estate property taxes. But we didn't, you know, nine people did think the other way on the previous board, but that's where the majority rules. Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if you go back far enough, this was the land that the Indian Nation wanted to use for a casino at one point in time, but that got voted down by the people within the community. But if we would have sold it to them, we would have it well behind us by now.
So I'm also hearing from the number of comments and the intensity of the comments that this is an agenda item that should be on our agenda on a more regular basis than it has been, in an effort to collectively hold feet to the fire. So I will make sure that that happens as well. Supervisor Cotter.
Mr. Schrader spoke a second time, so I appreciate you allowing me to as well. Thank you. All I wanted to do was to clarify that it was the county board that turned down the offer by the previous developer, and some people didn't like that particular lacrosse business. And so all I want to say again is the city wants it developed too. Thank you.
Mr. Shepherd, Corporation Council report.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I apologize. I didn't see Supervisor Geary's hand up. Supervisor Geary.
Well, let's get some clarity why we turned that down. Administratively, the city and the county said, instead of keeping it as the Holiday Inn, which someone wanted to do, and giving us $350,000, they gave us that more and better use where we're going to get this multi-million-dollar project on it. Obviously, it's stagnated from what it was, but administratively, they were telling us to turn it down because we were going to get this multi-million-dollar project that we're still waiting for.
Anybody else want to talk on our history lesson for the day? Now, Supervisor, Mr. Shepherd for Corp Council report.
Thank you. I've been asked to report on the issue of attendance as it relates to quorums at meetings. There seems to be an issue with supervisors not always calling in and letting the office know when you can't attend, and we've had a few times when we've had the lack of quorums. So I thought I would pull together a few of the rules that we need to keep in mind when meeting, and I think that the three different sources that I look at are the Wisconsin statutes, our own code, and Robert's Rules of Order when deciding what is a quorum and what is the importance of a quorum. First of all, Wisconsin statutes, as you're all aware, we have to abide by the Wisconsin Open Meetings Law. I think Mr. Menninger just made a reference to a recent court case on that very issue. We certainly do everything possible to adhere to that law. The Open Meetings Law defines a meeting as a convening of members of a governmental body for the purpose of exercising the responsibilities, authority, power or duties delegated to or vested in that body. And it's rebuttably presumed that when half of the members gather together, there is a meeting of that body for exercising those powers. So what does our code of ordinance say about a quorum? Under the rules of the county board, and I think it applies to committees as well, we define a quorum as being a majority of supervisors elected shall constitute a quorum to transact business. The problem with absenteeism, we don't know oftentimes when we don't have a quorum or when we will. If there are people that cannot attend and you call in and ask to be excused, the chair has the opportunity under our rules to appoint another supervisor to sit in your stead and to make sure that we achieve a quorum. He also can attend the meeting himself and act as an ex officio member of that committee and participate and vote. So it's important that that you call in if you can't attend. Mr. Schrader.
The only reason that the chair can attend the meeting and vote is if there isn't a quorum, isn't that correct?
Let me pull up that. The rule says that the county board chair shall serve as an ex officio member of all committees with voting privileges when a regular committee member is not present at the beginning of the meeting and the county chair board chair has been present throughout the meeting. So he can, if there isn't a, when a regular committee member is not present, he can sit in and vote.
So he can sit in the event that there's just someone missing, not when they don't have a quorum?
That's what our rule says. When the regular committee member is not present at the beginning. I think I'm not aware that he's ever done that except to make up a quorum, but that's what the rule states. But so he would normally only do that to make a quorum. It's my understanding of his position in the past, and he can't appoint another supervisor to serve as a temporary replacement. Then the issue I've been asked about what happens if there is not a quorum. In other words, there is not a majority of members of the committee at the beginning of the meeting. What can you do? I think that there's a misperception that the committee can hear reports, and I would tell you that that's not allowed under Robert's Rules of Order. You should what Robert's Rules and our county code says when our county code is silent on a matter, Robert's Rules of Order prevails. So we then refer to Robert's Rules on what happens if there is an absence of a quorum, and it says that any business transaction except for the procedural actions that I'll mention to you in just a minute are null and void. Robert's Rules goes on to say that the only action that can legally be taken in the absence of a quorum is to fix the time to which to adjourn, recess, or take measures to obtain a quorum. So you cannot hear reports, you cannot do anything other than to sit and wait for a quorum to arrive or to set the time to adjourn. So please, I guess that's why I stress it's so important. If you can't attend, call the chair's office, let the chair's secretary know that you can't attend, and if it's determined that there is a lack of a quorum, the chair can appoint a temporary replacement or come and sit in himself. So otherwise, if the committee does not have a quorum, you need to adjourn. That's all you can do. You cannot hear reports. You cannot gather information. You cannot discuss anything. And particularly, you cannot vote on anything. I think the misperception is you can hear reports as long as you don't take a vote. It's okay. It's not okay. You don't have a meeting because you don't have a quorum.
Supervisor Schrader.
I think we should have then one person that we call into to to report that we're not going to be present?
Cheryl Steffen would be that person.
The chair's secretary.
And if she's gone, she is gone this week. Terry Pavlik, Steve O'Malley's secretary, is there, and you could call her. And if neither one are available, then you can call the county clerk's office. There's always somebody there. So I would go down that order, Cheryl, Terry, and then the county clerk's office if you cannot attend.
Okay, because there have been mix-ups in the past. So yeah. Thank you.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does this mean, Bill, that you cannot set the date of the next meeting if you do not have a quorum?
You could set the date. You could do that if you would like to do that. That would be a procedural matter as to when to meet next. Yes, that would be okay.
Any other questions? Supervisor Brackmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering then, at this time, we have no ordinance or any kind of policy that governs board members' attendance. I mean, if they just someone chooses not to attend, they can just be AWOL.
Our rules say that that you need to attend. The county board chair can issue an arrest warrant to come have the deputies come out and get you. So, to my knowledge, he's never done that, but there's always that possibility, and that cost would be assessed against you. So that in our ordinance and state statutes, that's within his power to send an officer out under a warrant to bring you into the meeting. Or
is there
an absent supervisor? I'm not speaking of you personally, Mr. Brockmiller. I'm sorry.
Said
an absent supervisor.
Or an absent supervisor.
Yes. Yes.
So I have to ask, is there a standard in which he invokes that at a certain time, or is that at his or her discretion? Just wondering. I mean, at five absences and he's going to can come and get you, or can he do it on the first? I mean, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think he's ever done that. I'm not aware of any chair that's ever done that, but it is provided as a part of the as our ordinance and included in the state statute. I'll see if I can find that for you. As far as attendance, our county board rules say a supervisor shall attend all county board meetings. A supervisor may be excused from a session of the county board by giving prior notice to the county board chair, and that's what I was speaking about, Cheryl Steffen, or the county clerk. Failure to comply with this attendance requirement will subject the offender to the penalties pursuant to a certain Wisconsin statute, including having the county board chair issue a warrant for attendance as set forth in that statute. So, the statute says that the chairperson may issue a warrant requiring the sheriff or some constable immediately to arrest and bring the supervisor before the board. The expenses of the arrest shall be deducted from the pay of the member unless otherwise directed by the board. The board may punish its members for infraction of its rules by imposing the penalty provided in the rules. So
that's
how the intersection of our code with the state statute.
All right. Thank you.
So. Supervisor Billings.
What about this issue of collecting paychecks for a few meetings where there's no attendance? I know the city council, I believe they've changed their rules that govern their body so that under a certain amount of period, people don't get a paycheck. Could we change our ordinance to, I'm not saying we should or shouldn't, but is that a possibility for us if there's someone who doesn't attend a significant number of meetings?
It's possible. We don't have a per diem. You know, that's, you know, oftentimes bodies will provide pay per diem, and if you don't attend, you don't get paid. We don't have that. We've gone away from that to an amount per month. If you want to change the compensation, you'd have to do that for the next board. You couldn't change it for this board.
Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What Bill was referring to is county board meetings is one. The second cover of the committee meetings was, we do have something, I haven't been able to find it, but we have something in there where the chair for appoint somebody, but also if you're absent and miss so many meetings without excusing that, the chair can remove you from that committee.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Spiker is correct that that's also in our rules in 1.41, 3C, if you want to look at it. It says, in addition, the county board chair shall fill vacancies that are created by chronic absenteeism. Chronic absenteeism is defined as at least 3 unexcused absences from committee meetings during a calendar year. So if you have missed 3, it says unexcused absences from committee meetings, if you miss 3 of them, that falls into the category of chronic absenteeism. The county board chair could fill that vacancy.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, I'd be real careful about trying to put more rules in there sanctioning your colleagues for various absences or any other type of conduct. We always, I guess, have the ability to censor people if they do things that are horribly inappropriate, but attending meetings and not attending meetings is really between me and my constituents. I don't serve at your pleasure. I serve at the pleasure of my constituents, and they're the boss. And if they don't like how I'm conducting myself, if I'm going to meetings or not going to meetings, they have recall, they have elections every 2 years. And so my relationship, my trust is between me and my constituents, not between me and my colleagues. So I'd be real careful about going down that path, because pretty soon it could be we're going to do things to people because we don't like their ideas. They're unpopular. They're way out in left field, they're way out in right field. I think you have to be real careful about that.
It's 11 minutes before 10, and we haven't taken a vote yet. So I will draw our attention collectively to the bulletin board in the back of the room where cards and correspondence are, the side of the room, excuse me, over there near Supervisors Kyle and Bills Kemper. Are there any committee meetings to be held during recess, which I hope we don't have? Anybody need to have a committee meeting? If not, Supervisor Rauch, if you'd take the chair, please.
Thank you, Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one appointment this month, Beverly Mock, to fill the vacancy of Jason Gillette on the Historic Sites Preservation Commission for the balance of a 3-year term to expire December 31, 2008. I move its approval.
Motion by Supervisor Johnson, second by Supervisor Burke. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Rauch. Consent agenda, item number 2-7, Supervisor Plesha. Moved by Supervisor Plesha, seconded by Supervisor Sobranek. Discussion on the consent agenda. Supervisor Schrader.
On the minutes of the county board meeting, June 9th.
19th?
Is it 19th? Yeah, June 19th, 2008. The second page, under July meeting time change, under that, if you read down about halfway down through the paragraph, it says, Chair Doyle noted that at a luncheon he was impressed to learn that the tourism brings in $211 million a year to La Crosse County. It has nothing to do with the first part of the paragraph. So what is he referring to, or who took the notes? I don't know.
We'll take another look. The minute taker will take another look at it and see if an adjustment needs to be made. Thank you. Any other discussion on the consent agenda? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Supervisor Don Meyer. Planning Resources.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 3-7, petition number 1780, filed by David Harder, Marion Gardens Development, LLC, on behalf of Dolores Streck, to rezone from Agriculture District to Residential District A in the town of Unalaska. The committee voted 6-1 to approve this. I move for your approval.
Supervisor Meyer approves
the committee report, which is to approve the petition, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Carries unanimously.
Item 14-7, petition 1783, filed by Donald and Dory Early to rezone from traditional agriculture district to agriculture district A in the town of Greenfield. This petition was denied by the zoning committee. There's a real history behind this property. If you want to know the details, Jeff Bush can give those to you. Anybody wants that? I move for your approval to vote for the denial of this property.
Yeah, let's get this on the floor and then we can discuss it. Moved by Supervisor Meyer, the committee report, which is to deny, seconded by Supervisor Rauch. Discussion. Supervisor Schrader.
I read through the minutes of this particular petition. I'm still confused about it. I'd like, if there is a history on it, I'd like Mr. Bleski to clarify.
Jeff, can you help us out, please?
Is there real?
Thank you. The history on this started in 2005 when the applicant made a petition to do the same thing for one single-family residence. The county board did approve his request at that time, but did put a condition on it that it was only for one single-family residence. The individual applied for a zoning occupancy permit for a detached accessory building, a 40 by 82-foot building, not for a home. He had to get a variance for it because it was oversized and too tall for the parcel. Within the next 2 years, he switched it on his own to a single-family home without taking out a permit to do so. We caught that the end of 2007, which prompted him to start taking a look at some different options, including recording his deed restrictions, which he did not do. So, when his permit was issued, it was issued under the wrong zoning, which was still exclusive ag, and you need 35 acres for that zoning district. He decided to make an application to split it into two lots because he was in some financial straits and wanted to sell this 40 by 82 foot single family home and build another home on a lot adjacent to this. Well, he owns 100 acres just behind this in Vernon County as well, where they don't have any restrictions. Our land use plan indicates that this area should stay agricultural. So they voted to deny this based on the fact that he'd already been given the opportunity to put one house on it. And now he was asking to have that condition lifted. So it was denied. If he wants to keep the home that he's got there, all he has to do is record the deed restrictions.
Well, the floor, Supervisor Schrader.
Okay. From what I read in the minutes, I haven't seen this site. I can't remember viewing it or anything, but the property is entirely woods except for 4 acres or something like that. Is that right?
I believe that the portion that's in La Crosse County is about 10 some acres right now. When you pull into the driveway, it's not a real steep driveway, but that's where you run into the pole building, the new single family home, and to the east of that is some woods. So there might be 3-4 acres of woods. But as you look to the west then, down the hill, it's all farmland. I don't know if he's renting it out, but if the committee can remember when we were out there, it seemed like it was a cornfield.
Yeah, the minutes made it seem like, well, what he said, I know it was all woods. And then also I'm confused, is he living in that pole building, or is there another home on the property?
No, he's living in the pole building that was converted to a single-family home.
Single-family.
It's a two-story pole building.
Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Just a point to add, he is renting his land out to a neighbor who does put corn and beans and hay in there, and he hasn't got a lot of land, probably 4.5 acres of open land right there along the road. Mm-hmm. but the fence is the dividing line on the back of his property with us in Vernon County.
Any other questions of Mr. Bleski? Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Jeff. You mentioned that part of his land is in Vernon County. I mean, I don't know if we've got many parcels like this. With our zoning of agricultural, then if somebody happened to have property, could they build multiple houses in Vernon County?
Yes.
What if they had to access it from La Crosse County? Would they have to get an easement from us?
He was looking at that in the survey that he had had done for this project. He did indicate that he was going to have a shared easement with the existing home and the new home, but he took it all the way to the county line. So it would be up to the town of Greenfield if they wanted to see a town road put in that would service anything that was done in Vernon County. But that's possible. He did discuss that option with us in his application.
Supervisor Schrader.
According to the minutes here, the town of Greenfield hadn't acted on it when you guys voted on it. Have they gotten any response from them yet?
Yes, I did, and it was kind of unofficial. We require the response to be in writing. One of my staff received an email from the town chairman, Mr. Motter, indicating that the town wanted to refer this for 30 days, thinking that they wanted to amend their town plan, which they haven't started doing yet. I did have some conversation with the applicant, Mr. Early, and he was kind of confused about the process because the town of Greenfield hasn't started to amend their existing plan yet, and I think they're going to have a contract with Mississippi River Regional Planning, but they haven't signed any papers yet. So what they would be looking at doing is amending the plan before it's amended again. And since they haven't gone through this process, and if you take a look at our balloon chart, that's not one of the things that's on the balloon that says if the town wants to refer it to discuss land use issues. So I brought this forward because it was a denial, even if they would recommend yes on it. The action by this committee is recommending denial. So it would really be up to this, if the county board wanted to refer this back to the committee, I'd indicated to Mr. Motter to contact the county board supervisor to have somebody bring that up. Well, evidently he hasn't done that. So my recommendation, if that would have happened, to refer it back to the committee would have been to withdraw the petition until the plan is done, because that's consistent with the action this board's already talked about. The plan should be in place before we react to some of these things, even though people can make an application. So,
Supervisor Bino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am the supervisor that covers his area, and I did talk to him, and he's not asking that we pull it off the table.
Okay.
There are other options, and we discussed some of them.
Thank you.
So the motion before us is to approve the committee report, which is to deny the request. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no. Supervisor Erickson.
How does he know?
The motion is approved. Back to you, Supervisor Meyer.
Item 5-7, petition number 1784, George and Marilyn Skilbeck, to rezone from exclusive agriculture district to residential district A in the town of Holland. The committee voted 6-1 in favor to approve this. I move for your approval.
Moved by Supervisor Meyer, seconded by Supervisor Richmond. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously.
Item 6-7, petition 1785 by James A. Frege to rezone from exclusive agriculture district to agricultural district A in the town of Farmington. The committee voted 6-1 in favor. I move for your approval.
Moved by Supervisor Meyer, seconded by Supervisor Schrader. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously.
Item number 7-7, conditional use permit 7780 filed by Rod Sachs in conjunction with Hague Contractors on behalf of Gary and Pamela Schomburg to remove approximately 2,500 square cubic yards of burl material to be used on the Wisconsin District or Wisconsin Department of Transportation bridge replacement site on Road 162 in the town of Burns. This was approved 6-1 and had 7 conditions on it. I move for your approval.
Committee report is moved by Supervisor Myers, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Supervisor Myers, Supervisor Rauch, Executive Committee, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have item 8-7, a resolution regarding implementation of the merger of the printing department with the IT department. Whereas technology has changed such that the county has fewer photocopy machines and more IT printing devices attached to the computer network, and whereas the nature of printing all manner of materials has become more dependent on digital and computer technology, which expands options to a very broad selection, whereas it is desirable to merge the existing printing and information technology departments to ensure coordination, cooperation, and the highest efficiency in all printing and copying, as well as digital scanning and internet mailing options. And whereas the merger of union and non-union staff positions need to be coordinated with the duties performed by staff as part of a unified department, and a plan has been developed to accomplish the merger, now therefore it be resolved that the summary plan of merger of the printing department with the information technology department, a copy of which is attached hereto and made a part hereof, to be adopted as the plan of reorganization. Be it further resolved that the county administrator is authorized to approve printing department position reclassifications as deemed appropriate with the new job responsibilities. Be it further resolved that the personnel and finance departments are authorized and directed to take such action as is necessary to carry out the intention of this resolution. Fiscal note, funding is available in the general fund contingency account 1063-79030. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Rauch, seconded by Supervisor Wood. Discussion. Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. Maybe I'm missing something here, but under please note, the approximate cost 2008 budget effective August 1st is $3,510 or $8,053 annual cost, and it goes down below to say how much you're saving. Why are we having to pay out anything?
Gary, can you handle that one, please?
The your reference to the approximate costs to the 2008 budget of approximately $3,500, that would be for the reclasses, if they are approved. And, I mean, does that answer your question?
Well, why is it a cost to the county if they're going to save a total of $20,138?
There's still an expense. I mean, there's an expense in the fact that the reclasses create higher salaries. Yes, there are other indirect savings by consolidating equipment.
Any other discussion? Supervisor Geary.
Yes. You know, I don't quite understand. When you merge two departments, we still have the same number of people working. We're not losing any staff, and we have to reclassify four people for doing the same jobs they're currently doing. I mean, I don't understand it. Why do four people need to be reclassified to do their to continue to do their existing duties?
I'm going to ask that John Parshall come in and be heard on this mic. You're welcome to come in also, unless you wanted to handle it, Gary.
If I could direct you to the budget impacts page, maybe look at number one. What has happened in parts of the merger, before, 30 departments used to take care of their own equipment when it comes to printing and copiers. They used to do the ordering, the purchasing, and the supplying. As a single department, we took that back in and centralized it, reduced the vendors, got a better rate for our leases, and then got into purchase volume purchasing. Now, in doing that, we saved money in the departments because now they can go back to their core jobs, work on more what they were actually there to do, service the customer, And when me and Mike merged, we had to take some of those responsibilities back from the departments and do that stuff. So just as the resolution reads, also the changing environment and landscape of the technology is such that I knew when if we didn't merge, I was not staffed efficiently enough to take on that challenge, but with Mike's resources and mine combined, we could do that. So like number 1, 4, and 5, I was asked to put some cost savings together, but as Gary said, they're indirect, so it was really hard for us to give you a number. I didn't even include 1A, 4, and 5 in that grid, because everything is different across the departments, and trying to get staff time that was spent through the sub-departments was a difficult task. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, not exactly. You've got 3 printing assistants, and they're all going to get a reclassification. Are they getting additional training from IT, and now they're going to have more complicated duties or higher technical duties? Or
yes, they'll start doing a lot of the scanning operations. They'll help us with the fleet management of the output devices. They'll work with the support through our help desk with those devices. Mike, anything else?
Do they do those kind of duties currently?
No, they never did.
So your department will teach them how to do those duties?
Correct.
Supervisor Ebert.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Did I misunderstand? Did you say you've already merged?
Well, if you look at the that second page, because we had to do 4 and 5, we started in 3, we had to redeploy the fleet, and we had to get into the scanning world. Those activities were done, and we've worked together to get that accomplished. Some of the direction we had was if we were going to make it work, we had to do it and get it underway before we'd bring a resolution to the board.
So you have already merged?
Only in collaboration.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So the motion before us is to approve Resolution 8-7. Supervisor Burns.
Just a comment on Supervisor Ebert's comment. I think what you're saying is you've always, I mean, collaboration has always been a goal, and you've always collaborated well before even entertaining the notion of merging, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All those in favor of 8-7 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. 1 no, Supervisor Erickson. Back to you, Supervisor Roach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have item 9-7, a resolution regarding authorization to offer Aflac benefits to county employees. Whereas the county has received input from both union and non-union regarding desired additional insurance benefits to protect employees and their families at a time when the county is not financially able to expand benefits, and whereas benefit programs are available through the American Family Life Assurance Company, known as Aflac, and whereas Aflac allows employees to select from a group of benefits and to pay only for those items desired, and employees have the choice to cancel benefits when they deem prudent, and all transactions are between the employee and Aflac with no expense or enrollment administration incurred by the county other than set up of payroll deductions, now therefore it be resolved that American Family Life Assurance Company is approved as a provider of supplemental insurance benefits to county employees as they may select, provided that the county shall incur no expense for employee benefits provided by Aflac, and provided that applicable Social Security credits shall apply to the county. And be it further resolved that the finance and personnel departments are authorized and directed to take such action necessary to carry out the intention of this resolution. Fiscal note, there is no expense associated with this resolution, as employees will pay 100% of the cost of benefits they select. There will be some administration in setting up a payroll deduction for Aflac benefits, but there will be a net savings to the county of the Social Security tax of 7.65% on all amounts paid by employees pre-tax for the Aflac benefits. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Rauch, seconded by Supervisor Richmond. Any discussion? Supervisor Schrader.
Don't make faces at me.
Is this a local American Family agent? Are they the ones that sell this product, or who do they go through to get this?
Bob Kahn, could you come and answer questions, please, at the microphone?
I want to point out, to keep in mind, this is not American Family headquartered in Madison. It's a American Family Life Assurance. I think they're out of Ohio, possibly, although they do have local representatives.
Yes, there are two local representatives that we've been working with. And I think their office is in Onalaska.
So the answer is these are local agents that,
yes,
that sell this. Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Well, Bob, if I remember negotiations, and we negotiated a lot of contracts over the years gone by, it would appear to me that if we make this available to the people working for the county, it becomes at some point later a mandatory item for negotiations, and that's when it can cause some different problems. Because once we get it on the list of mandatory items to negotiate, it becomes part of the contract. And how soon, in your estimation, will this change? Because if we put it into the contract, they're going to be asking for us to pay part of the fees at some point in time. How ironclad is your last statement on here that it's not going to be part of the negotiations? I don't see that happening in the future.
Well, we're reasonably sure that this is not going to come back as a subject of bargaining. The Aflac benefits are so individualized and so tailored to each specific employee that the benefits that one person selects are going to be completely different than the other person. And there won't be a whole group signing up for a whole bunch of group benefits. So because of the unique nature, this doesn't lend itself to across-the-board bargaining. The unique nature is also a wonderful benefit, too, that we're not providing. One of the things is vision coverage. Well, we're not providing vision for every single county employee. We're only providing it for those that want to select that option.
Okay, in about 2 years from now, if that changes, I'll come back and ask the same question.
Please do.
Any other questions of Bob Taunt while he's up here? Thank you, Bob. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Supervisor Erickson. That resolution is approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have item 10-7, a resolution regarding acceptance of Clifton Gunderson's audit report on La Crosse County 2007 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Whereas the audit firm of Clifton Gunderson and Company has recently completed their audit of the financial statements of La Crosse County for the year ended December 31, 2007, and whereas the financial audit management letter was presented to the La Crosse County Board at their planning meeting on July 7, 2008, now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby accepts the financial audit and management letter as presented for the 2007 fiscal year. Fiscal note, Clifton Gunderson's fee for 2007 audit services will not exceed $58,700. Charges are allocated to several departments. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Rauch, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. Discussion. Supervisor Ebert.
When will this come up? Remember we talked about RFPs and stuff. When will the next time we will look at the possibility of changing auditors?
I'm guessing off the top of my head, but I believe there's one, possibly two more years in their contract.
Thank you, sir.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Supervisor Erickson. Supervisor Rauch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have item 11-7, a second reading of ordinance number 66 regarding an ordinance to amend section 2.02 paren 7 paren A and paren B of chapter 2 of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin regarding resolutions. This being the second reading, I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Rauch, seconded by Supervisor Brock Miller. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously. Thank you, Supervisor Rauch. Supervisor Plesha, Aging and Long-Term Care.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have item 12-7, creation of supervising account clerk position at Lakeview. Whereas the business office has been increasingly burdened with additional financial duties over the last 3 years and has had no additional assistance as workload has increased, and whereas the addition of two adult family homes, another nursing home licensed area, a licensed CBRF area, RCAC license at Whispering Pines, community individuals now attending our sheltered workshop, and the Mississippi Valley Health Services have additional major financial oversight duties to the financial manager, in addition to the existing responsibilities for Lakeview budget. And whereas the financial manager has been required to work longer hours to keep up with work and does not have adequate time to supervise staff, monitor ongoing operations of all entities and other functions, in addition to bookkeeping, which is essential to the financial well-being of Lakeview. Whereas the funding available from increased census, Mississippi Valley Health Services revenues, and non-licensed Lakeview revenues have directly related to the work being done by the financial manager, now therefore it be resolved that Lakeview Healthcare Center is authorized to hire one additional supervising account clerk at paid grade CE-15, effective July 21st, 2008. The fiscal note of this cost and wage fringe roll-up for the full-time supervising account clerk is approximately $25,950 for 2008 and an annual cost of $58,060 for the rest of Lakeview's budget for next year. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Plesha, seconded by Supervisor Richmond. Just a reminder to the board, this requires a two-thirds vote of the full board because it's an outside of budget or an unbudgeted item. Discussion. Supervisor Bina.
Well, the question I have is if this person is hired and if we are in this Mississippi Valley Health Services, which is a group of adjoining counties that bring people here, is that cost going to be divided with them, and how much are they going to pay in addition to what we have to pay? Is that all coming out of our county budget?
Supervisor Plesha.
No, it's not. The Mississippi Valley has partially a daily rate for each individual, so part of that is going to be paid to the services, and so it's not all coming out of the county budget.
Supervisor Ebert.
Now, just a question on the fiscal note that says that there's adequate revenues in the Lakeview budget. I thought we were running a deficit of about $2 million a year, so how do you have adequate revenue source if you're running a deficit?
That $2 million amount is right. Mind. Pam or Gary?
Well, yeah, keep in mind that yes, we are running that deficit, but we levy for that deficit. I think the purpose of saying that there's adequate revenues, again, is keep in mind that for the year 2008, we budgeted $250,000 for the MVHS services, and we're really going to be running more like $750,000. So we are getting excess revenue more than we had planned.
And the other question would be, with the CMO leaving, don't we have any positions that we could transfer over or something that we'll be saving?
Well, you know, keep in mind that, you know, CMO is clearly an enterprise on their own. Our downtown staff has been providing some assistance to CMO in addition to their staff that's dedicated to CMO. However, we've had some vacancies even in our department, turnover and so forth and so on, and at this point in time, we do not have any extra staff available downtown.
And what would be the harm of waiting until the budget process to do this?
I guess I'll ask Pam to come up to the podium on that one.
Pam?
Our current financial manager has been managing each of these entities as they've added on and on over the last 3 years. She is head over tail just on the Lakeview budget at this point in time and doesn't really have adequate time to devote to all these other entities and appropriately where she can really keep the best eyesight on them. She's putting in a lot of overtime, working weekends, taking work home. She needs the help now, not in October when the CMO moves or in 2009. Gary?
If I could add a bit more. And we've been doing so many innovative things at Lakeview all of a sudden, all of at the same time. And they've been succeeding. And at a point in time, you know, the paperwork and the bookwork and the accounting catches up with us. Again, the finance department downtown here had been actually going out and assisting Lakeview with one of our positions. However, unfortunately, we lost that position to the city of La Crosse because they pay a little bit more. That person had been with us for about a year and a half, and you know, we'd spent a fair amount of time training that person. And that person from my department that was going out to Lakeview was really being very productive in assisting Lakeview, but then she left us about a month and a half ago, so now we've got to recruit and start all over and retrain, all while, again, Lakeview is doing all these innovative things. And as we know, MVHS has really mushroomed, successfully mushroomed, and we need the work done right now.
All right, thank you, sir.
Supervisor Schrader.
So Gary, let me get this straight. You guys are trying to recruit somebody the same capacity that... No?
Actually, the position in my department is quite a bit higher. Keeping in mind, again, that the position in my department works in all areas of the budget. Actually, the position in my department is very similar, a little bit lower in pay grade than Lakeview's financial manager. This position that's before you today, the CE15, is quite a bit lower yet than the financial manager. It's clearly a supervising a account clerk, supervising the low-level financial people.
Okay, how long do you anticipate on being taking to recruit somebody for this position?
You know, it's interesting. We advertised and we only got 5 applicants. That's not very many. We're hoping we can get one good person out of that 5, but we won't know until we actually go out. The last time we recruited for this position, it was vacant for at least 6 months, if not longer than that, until we got a qualified person.
So it could take until the next budget process to
yes,
do.
Yes, sure, it could.
Okay. Any other discussion? We're going to try this on a voice phone. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Supervisor Erickson. The resolution is approved. Thank you, Supervisor Plesha. Supervisor Hampson, Health and Human Services Board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is resolution item number 13-7, closing of Fund 955 West Central Consortium. Whereas Fund 955, consisting of two orgs, 9551 and 9552, were created to support the activities of WCC for long-term care. Whereas the funding associated with the planning and development for long-term care was no longer available following the end of 2007, and whereas the need to continue Fund 955 thus ended, and whereas any dollars remaining in the fund can be appropriately dispersed to Fund 900 Human Services Fund and Org 9520 CMO Operations to cover the necessary vacation expense balance of the West Central Consortium Project Coordinator. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the county, La Crosse County Board approves the closure of Fund 955, which has a current balance of $2,794.71. Be it further resolved that $1,622.86 be transferred to Fund 900. Be it further resolved that $1,171.85 be transferred to Org 9520. Fiscal note, this resolution allows the closure of Human Services Fund 955 to other La Crosse County funds via the transfer of $2,794.71. Fiscal impact is therefore neutral. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Hampson, seconded by Supervisor Billings. Discussion? Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. I have a... Is this the way things are normally done? You designate a fund to pay for somebody's vacation? I've never heard of that.
Well, the fund wasn't designated to pay for somebody's vacation. Keep in mind that this fund was established a while back for setting up the MCO. Okay, that was why the fund was originally established. There is a residual balance in that fund that we are requesting that amount be used to pay for somebody's vacation thing.
So was this person an employee of the county?
Bob just
contract.
Left. Go ahead.
It was contract.
Yes.
This position was contracted through the management group, TMG, to the county to do the coordination of the regionalization.
So we pay for their vacation. That's what I'm questioning. Right?
The funds from the state actually paid for the project coordinator position. That was the planning and implementation. We had two grants. I think one was a planning grant and then one was an implementation grant. And those funds came to the state or from the state to the county. The county contracted with the management group to hire Melissa Gilbert and I think that's the right sequence, Gary.
Yes, that's correct.
Does that answer your question, Supervisor Schrader?
Yeah, it just seems odd to me that we would pay for somebody's vacation. That it's not our employee, I guess.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Carries unanimously. Thank you, Supervisor Hampson. Supervisor Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Item 14.7 to the Honorable Members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding placement of City of La Crosse microwave dish on Bluff Tower. Whereas the City of La Crosse radio system has limited coverage in areas off of Highway 1461, including the areas of the Shrine, Waterford Valley, and Pineview Mobile Home Park. And whereas the City has plans to put a repeater on a U.S. cellular tower in the area of Highways 1461 that will improve the radio coverage for its 800 megahertz system, and whereas in order to have connectivity to the Public Safety Communication Center, the City needs space on the La Crosse County Bluff Tower for its microwave dish, and the use should be an oven there, Madam Chairman, of one of the county's 16 T1 lines from Bluff Tower to the Communication Center. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board approves the use of space on Bluff Tower by the City of La Crosse for its microwave dish, subject to a written agreement between the county and city to be signed by the County Board Chair after approval by the Corporation Council. Be it further resolved that the county will not charge the city for the location of its microwave dish on Bluff Tower, but the city shall be responsible for any and all costs associated with its use of Bluff Tower. Fiscal note, there will be no cost or negative impact for the county resulting from the use of space by the city on Bluff Tower. With the addition of that, I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. Discussion? Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have no problem with the county giving the space to the city. I have a question about which committee this went through. Why didn't this resolution come before Public Works and Infrastructure?
Supervisor Burke.
It came through the emergency services, which would be the jurisdiction of Judiciary and Law Committee.
Because it has to do with public safety communications.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously. Thank you, Supervisor Burke. Supervisor Spiker, Public Works and Infrastructure.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Item 15-7, authorization to sell property 907 8th Avenue North, Comp 18681-1 to the City of Onalaska. It was approved by the Public Works Committee on a 6-1 vote. It was about a 30-minute discussion on it. Whereas La Crosse County has acquired title to delinquent tax property located 907 8th Avenue North, Onalaska, Wisconsin, consisting of a vacant lot that is 100 by 100, and whereas the county is authorized to sell its tax-deeded lands in such manner as upon such terms as the county board may be by resolution determined, and county may transfer such land to any municipality within the county pursuant to Wisconsin Statutes 7535-2, 5952-6, and whereas the total amount of unpaid general property taxes and other expenses accessed to the real estate for the years 2001 and 2005 is $1,406.35, broken down as follows. Unpaid property tax, $784.82. Interest, $413.96. Penalty, $207.57. Whereas La Crosse County Comprehensive Plan recommends a type of activity, the following is the adopted goal within the housing element on page 125 of the plan. Make tax delinquent lands available at below market rate prices to not-for-profit housing providers as sites for affordable housing that will be returned to the tax roll. Whereas the committee recommends selling the property to the City of Onalaska for $900, which would reimburse the county for unpaid property tax, except the penalty and interest levied upon the delinquent taxes, and its selling costs and such sale would be in the best interest of the taxpayers of La Crosse County. Now, therefore, it be resolved that La Crosse County Board authorizes the sale of 907 8th Avenue North, La Crosse, to the City of, that is a mistake there, should be Onalaska. 907 8th Avenue North, Onalaska. So can you strike the La Crosse and insert Onalaska? Be it further resolved, the County Board and County Chair are authorized to sign a deed conveying to the property known as 907 8th Avenue North, Onalaska, Wisconsin, by its legal description and any other documents necessary to sell the property to the City of Onalaska upon the approval by the Corporation Council. Fiscal note, the total amount of unpaid general property tax previously paid by the county to the taxing jurisdiction for this property was $748.82. The property has been owned by La Crosse County since 2006, and therefore the property is tax exempt for the years 2006 to 2008. I move for approval, Madam Chair.
Moved by Supervisor Spiker, seconded by Supervisor Benrud. And back to you, Supervisor Spiker.
I'd like Charlie to speak on this, but before he does, there's also, it was laid on your desk, a Community Land Trust Cooley Regent that has to do with this too, and it may muddy the waters even more, but I'll let Charlie handle that.
Supervisor Spiker, while Charlie's coming in, we just hold up that document so people know what they're looking for on their desk, please. Thank you. So it's white, single page, front to back. Charlie?
Okay, what you have in front of you is a proposal for a project of affordable housing where we're working in partnership with Cooley Cap and the City of Onalaska to propose a residential single-family home on this lot that would be made available to a family in La Crosse County that would qualify under the program that Cooley Cap has proposed to be administered, and that is in that paper of the Cooley Land Trust model. The idea is currently in working with affordable housing, it's fairly typical that you work with a family to provide affordable housing. They purchase that facility, they purchase that single family home, and once they're finished living in that home, then they sell it at market rate. So we lose that affordability potentially. This concept is to provide what's considered permanent affordability through the land trust, where at that point when that landowner would then sell to the next, that there is deed restrictions recorded, and through the land trust model that it would be sold again affordable. And we say permanent affordability, it's not in perpetuity, it's two 99-year leases, so it's only 198 years.
Supervisor Schrader, Did you have a question?
No, I was the one that voted against this, and I was going to second it this time around. It's been explained.
I'm sorry that I missed that.
Yeah, that's all right. That's fine.
Supervisor Ebert.
Yes, sir. Charlie, once we sell this land, what is the county involvement?
We will negotiate a developer's agreement that will include both the City of Onalaska and the Cooley Cap that requires that the only way we would sell it would be that this project would get done. So from that point, once we sell it, we will be involved in the planning a bit of the project, but Cooley Cap will take over the administration and handling of it.
And it just seems to me we're getting involved. Why won't we just turn this over to Onalaska and let them negotiate with? It just seems to me that we're expanding a plate that we have a municipality that it's more appropriate that they do it than us.
And they'll be involved also. We're involved from the standpoint of this is in our comprehensive plan. This is something that we're directed to do through the comprehensive plan to assist in affordable housing, and it's really minimal effort on my part and probably some from Corp Council to look at that developer's agreement to make sure the county's protected, that this project gets done, and at that point then the city will work with Cooley Cap and then Cooley Cap will administer it.
Yeah, I guess I support the idea. I just don't think the county should be involved, so I guess I'm going to vote against it under. And I would rather see us just deed restrict when we sell it, that it has to be done that way. Again, the sooner we get things out of off our plate, Mr. Shepard's busy, you're busy, and it just doesn't make sense to me that the county stay involved in something that we don't have to. We didn't do it with the property up on 9th Street or whatever, and it just doesn't make sense to me that the county stays involved in something we don't need to. Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is Cooley Cap going to renovate this house? We aren't tearing the house down.
No,
there
should be a photo. I didn't make copies for everybody, but there should be a photo in your threesome there. You can see that the lot is vacant.
This is a vacant lot.
They'll be building
Cooley
a new home.
Cap will build a new home. Okay, the question then I have is, it will be put on the tax roll at some price, and nobody knows what that value is until the house is complete, but it would be current market, or would you give the people that are moving in are probably low-income people, and they're going to be there's going to be applicants for it, and somebody will choose. What will the taxes roughly be? Would it be the value of the property that the house was built out of then? Current market?
Well, I can't speak for the City of Onalaska's assessor. That's going to be his or her responsibility to put an assessed value to this.
Yeah.
What I can say is the likelihood is it is not a full fair market property.
Probably not.
But again, that's up to the assessor to make a professional determination. We have seen in other areas of the country where a land trust is used where the assessor acknowledges that it's not for sale to the full market. And so there's a limited marketability, which means that the assessment is reduced. Not certain on any of that. That's just to give you an indication.
And Minneapolis does this in their city to a great extent, and the city up there handles it. I had a friend of mine who was fixing these houses up and working with them, and he was buying the houses. It's a good program for low-income people. But the city up there is doing this, and not necessarily county, but it sounds like we're going to have limited involvement because it's a property that is not on the tax roll at a high rate, so it's okay.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you. How many people qualify for this in the county, roughly? You got an idea?
80% of the median income, so anybody below that would qualify. It is also a voluntary program, so somebody would need to be interested in signing up for this program. But
would that be half the county?
I can't answer that. Todd Mandel is here from Cooley Cap, but you know that would be up to you if you want to hear from him. I don't know that there's statistics that say how many people qualify for that.
Okay, you had to be 80% or less of the income level. I'm saying you have to be pretty close to 80%.
or you couldn't make the mortgage payment. You probably can't be at 50% of the income, because you know, even with the subsidy, this thing is probably going on the tax rolls at 100. I think at the meeting it was explained it'll probably be about $150,000 home.
Actually, probably about $180,000.
$180,000 home. You'd never make the payments, even insurance.
That's part of the administration that Cooley Cap will do, is to make sure that the person that gets in there will be able to afford it, and that's part of the subsidies that they're looking for from the federal government that will assist that person to be able to afford the payment.
Well, that's the subsidy, is to get them in there at a reduced cost, but after they're in there, they have to make all the payments.
That's correct.
That's what I'm saying. You have to be pretty close to the 80% when you're saying, you know, below 80. I'm trying to figure out some numbers, how you'd make the payments, and you'd have to be close to that, because what's a mortgage on about $180,000 home?
Probably about $1,200 a month. But it will not be for this home. We have I think it was around $800 a month with the subsidy. That's principal, interest, and taxes.
Insurance is separate. Okay, I don't want to
Todd can
that,
answer
anyway.
That. I can't.
Is that it for you, Supervisor Geary?
Yeah.
Supervisor Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I sit on the Cooley Cap Board representing the county along with Jill Billings, and I just encourage people to support this. It's a new innovative tool for low-income people to be able to afford a home, and it's an excellent program. I just encourage you to support it. Thank you.
Supervisor Rauch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll support this also. I think it's a good property for this purpose in a good location. For those of you that have a chance to take a look at the picture, it's mostly is surrounded by duplexes. In the upper left-hand corner of the picture are the northeast end of the playgrounds for the Onalaska Middle School, so clearly children from this residence will be able to walk to school. It's an excellent location in that particular regard. I agree with Supervisor Ebert's concern that the county not spend an inordinate amount of energy or effort or time in supporting this endeavor, but I believe that his suggestion of deed restrictions is essentially the documentation that that Charlie will be working on and Bill will be reviewing, and just sort of giving a slightly protracted handoff of that baton to the city of Onalaska, but not absorbing a significant amount of effort. I've spoken to Mayor Giese in Onalaska. He supports this. Perhaps his greatest concern is that there's only this particular endeavor and perhaps one other location in the city of Onalaska where they'll be able to do this for low-income housing, and he wished there were a greater opportunity, because there is, in fact, a greater need, but it is financially constrained by the funds available to support the program. So I will be voting to support this. Thank you.
Supervisor Brockmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just heard words like median and 80%, and that catches my ear. If it's 80% of the median, then I'd have to know the full distribution. But roughly, it would be about a third of county residents would tend to be eligible for that, in a theory. That would, if it's 80% of the median, probably about a third of county residents are below that 80 percentile, if that helps.
No disrespect to you, Todd, but it always helps to have a labor market analyst on the county board to share those numbers with you. Thank you, Supervisor Brockmiller. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you. My question is, following on what Bill said, can we get some actual numbers, like what is the amount per year that's the median or whatever? I think people would be astonished at how many people live in poverty in La Crosse County. So can we get, like, what is the median income and what does 80% of it in dollars per year?
80% of the AMI for eight persons in a family is 66.9. For five persons in a family is 54.750. For three persons in a family is 45.650. And for one person in a family is 35,500.
So that's the 80% of the median. Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to have one thing. If I understand this correct, Charlie, we, the county, initiated with Onalaska to do this property.
That's correct.
Not the city of Onalaska. And I think we have a responsibility when we initiate something that we fully cooperate with that municipality. And by the way, this is also landlocked.
Supervisor Meyer.
I call for the question.
The question has been called for by Supervisor Meyer, seconded by Supervisor Manti. I don't see anybody else wanting to speak on this issue, so we will vote on the question of whether or not to close debate, as a hand went up in the back of the room. All those in favor of closing debate signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Supervisor Burke. Debate is closed. We will now vote on item 15-7. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Two noes, Supervisor Erickson, Supervisor Ebert. The resolution is approved. Thank you, Supervisor Spiker. Is that it for you?
Nope.
Oh, sorry.
I am 16-7. This is a resolution that will go to the WCA. I don't see Brian around. He's the one that initiated this. But I'll read it, and if you got any questions, we'll see what we can do on it. But this will go to the WCA. Support for medication disposal programs. Whereas the Wisconsin citizens, business, industries, and municipalities depend on proper management of waste to proper human health and environment and to promote continued economic development and the welfare of the future generation. Whereas unused and unwanted pharmaceuticals and other medications are being indefinitely stored or disposed of improperly, which can lead to poisoning, abuse, and negative environmental impacts. Whereas a year 2000 USGS survey of 139 streams in 39 states, including Wisconsin, found an average of 7 to 38 medications related to contaminants like steroids, hormones, and antibiotics. Whereas stakeholders and partners, including natural resources organizations, healthcare facilities, nursing and assisted living facilities, law enforcement, pharmacies, residents, and more are interested in properly disposing of unused or unwanted medications. Now, therefore, be resolved, La Crosse County Board of Supervisors does hereby support the implementation of the medication collection disposal programs that meet local, state, and federal regulations that provide service to residents and businesses that use environmental sound means of disposing of collected medications. Be further resolved, La Crosse County Board of Supervisors encourages the state to promote and fund collection programs that meet the needs of citizens and businesses on a permanent year-round basis, as well as event-style one-day collection programs and specialized innovative pilot programs such as X-Mailback. And be it further resolved, the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors also encourages the state to develop funding mechanisms for such programs, including the options of being paid by medication providers, pharmaceutical manufacturers, and fiscal note is no cost to La Crosse County. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved Madam by Chair. Supervisor Spiker, seconded by Supervisor Schrader. Discussion. Supervisor Veenstra.
I'm curious about the second or the first be it further resolved when it says X mailback. I think some divorce lawyers might be interested in that, but I think they mean RX mailback, unless I'm mistaken.
As in prescription mailback? RX mailback? Would you agree, Supervisor Spiker, that was the intent?
I never argue with a lawyer.
With that suggested change, any other discussion on the resolution? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Supervisor Erickson. Back to you, Supervisor Spiker.
17-7 was approved unanimously by the Public Works Committee, approved unanimously by the Executive Committee. Approval of Change Order for Waste Relocation Contract D-06. Whereas by prior resolution 11-4-06, the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors approved the awarding of the Waste Relocation Contract D-06 to St. Joseph Construction Company with the original contract price of $3,040,240. Well, due to conditions encountered during work, the county's engineer, Foth Infrastructure and Environment LLC, St. Joseph of Construction has requested a change order to waste relocation contract, whereas the change order requests changes in four areas which are summarized as follows. The final pay qualities based on the revised pay volumes result in a deduction of $270,996.60. Number two, additional cost of $208,848 were incurred with no having a fluff layer in place in phase six of the landfill, which costs were related to longer haul distance and other inefficiencies. Number three, the substantial and final completion dates need to be revised. Four, the contract needs to authorize additional grading work to remove contaminated soils at the unit cost of $2.45, which amount is unknown, but cost is estimated to be approximately $245,000. Whereas due to additional grading work, additional work will exceed the original contract price by approximately $182,851. Whereas it is the best interest of La Crosse County to approve the change order. Now, therefore, be resolved that the La Crosse County Board approves the contract change order as detailed in resolution. Fiscal note, funds for the change order shall come from the solid waste undesignated fund balance that currently has a balance of approximately $8.4 million instead of bond proceeds. I move for approval, Madam Chair.
Moved by Supervisor Spiker, seconded by Supervisor Schrader. Discussion. Supervisor Ebert.
Has the work already been done?
Anybody know the answer to that?
I don't. That's a question I had. I thought of later to ask Brian in committee that I didn't ask, and I assumed he was going to be here or a representative of the department, which is chair of the committee. I had requested at all times. Evidently, it wasn't followed.
Anybody else know the answer? Supervisor Ebert, do you know the answer in your?
Absolutely not.
It
seems sometimes things get done, and then we get asked to approve, and I was just trying to see if this happened to be one of those instances.
Yeah. No, good point. Go ahead, Supervisor Spiker.
I agree with Ebert, but what else could you do? I mean, if I can't have the department head or one of the designates of the thing here doesn't follow the director of the committee, what am I supposed to do then? But I'd like to point out one thing. Is this was bid out, and of course St. Joseph had a low bid. Even with this addition, would be lower than the second bid, which was Hoffman Construction Company. That's one thing that I found myself. So we're paying less money. It wouldn't change the bid one way or the other.
Right.
But I did have a concern that, as Mr. Ebert said, has this been done? Because I have another question if it has been done. And I missed it in committee. I apologize to the board for that. But I just didn't think at the time.
So that addresses the process issue, but not the financial issue, but not the process question.
My other question is,
I just ask you a hand for a minute. Is there somebody here who can get Brian on the phone so we can ask him those questions? Thank you, Charlie. Or somebody from the department who would be able to answer that question.
My other question is, in the fiscal note, what is the actual dollar amount? Because we have a 270 off and then 208 plus and then 245 and 182. What is the actual amount of additional funds that we're going to take from the $8.4 million?
Okay, so we'll get that also.
It's in a resolution. It's $182,851 more.
That's the net?
Okay. I apologize. I'm not smart enough to figure it out, but it would be nice just in the fiscal note to make it a little easier. Because when there's the pluses and minuses and all the other stuff, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Well, I haven't followed the landfill very close, but we have a lot of contracts out there. Is this the old landfill or the new landfill? And, you know, Charlie left too now.
The answer to that question is yes.
Okay.
Keep in mind that we're consolidating the old into the new.
You're right. I agree. So it is part of the old as well as part of the new, and does that include some of the fill that goes along? Okay, here, Brian, now he can explain.
Oh, wait, just finish your question. So you know which part of the landfill, new or old?
Yeah.
So Brian, can you come up to the microphone, please? We have a couple of questions. We'll start with that one just because you heard it as you came into the room.
I'm not sure if you heard it either.
Where is work being done?
Well, what part, you know, you have a lot of contracts out there, and I'm not sure if this is part of the old landfill or the new landfill or a combination of both. And,
this is work for taking waste from the old landfill, which now no longer exists,
right,
and moving it into the new landfill. And underneath the old landfill, we've done this in two phases. In the first phase, the soil underneath the landfill was a type of material that wasn't heavily contaminated. In the second phase, it's much more contaminated and more things have to be done with it, which we didn't anticipate.
So there is a bigger workload out there just because we underestimated what was going to happen out there, and the $3,040,000 is the contract that we had with St. Joe's for doing the work out there.
Yes, there's a change order of I think $181,000 for removing those extra contaminated soils.
And that was over and beyond what we anticipated. So
correct.
It was partly our fault.
I don't know how you can anticipate what's underneath the landfill, particularly when the first phase didn't have this contamination.
I know. Nobody knows what's underneath there, and it's moving. So
I'm going to ask to go back to Supervisor Ebert, who had the initial question that we needed you, Brian Tippetts, to answer. So, Supervisor Ebert?
Has this work already been done?
Yes.
I'll yield to Mr. Spiker.
I have a question for the Corporation Council then. How can they do something with it? If change orders, when we were building the highway shop, we sat down with the contractor and the change orders were done before they didn't do the change orders until they had approval from the committee. How can this be done without approval of the committee? Is there some other authority? Maybe the administrator has the authority or something? That's what I have a concern with.
Not to this amount. I don't know. I guess I don't know under what authority they proceeded.
Let me address some of those issues. This contamination is required to remove by the Department of Natural Resources. We would have had to come to ask permission to delay removing contaminated material. In addition to that, by not getting this done, we'd also delay the release of long-term care monies, which the county is relying upon as well. So there could have been a method, perhaps, to bring it before the county.
Well, evidently you needed committee approval because you came to the committee to bring it to the county board. We could call a meeting within 24 hours, is my understanding of the open meetings law and everything. So I have a hard time understanding that the work can be done, but it never been authorized by the committee or the county board.
Let me just clarify. I think what we need to do is make sure that we need to make a decision on this resolution, and then we need to make a decision on if there's anything else that we want to do as a result of discovering that this work was done prior to authorization. So I guess I would just ask us to consider separating those two items.
I need to make a clarification on what I said. There are five aspects to this change order. Item number 2, 3, and 4 have been done. The last one, which is the addition, hasn't been done.
Go ahead, Supervisor Spiker.
What amount of money did they associate with them? And they were never brought before the committee, or they were brought before the committee?
Change order number 1 is a deduct of $271,000 that was not brought before the committee. The additional cost for the fluff layer, which is $94,000, didn't increase the price of the contract because of the deduct. That was discovered as we got into the project. The additional distance was because of the fluff layer of $110,000, still kept us underneath the contract amount. It's this current aspect that brings us over the contract amount, and that part hasn't been done yet. All the other work has been done.
Well, you can see where my concern is, the chair of the committee is, and we talked about it. That's why you were good enough to give me the bids, what the first initial bid was, even with that amount is still under it. But I can see down the road that somebody can look at something like that and then come in for a change order, and if it's not authorized by the committee of the county board, if somebody wants to give the power to the staff to do that and that's fine, but what is the rules right now that says that?
Let me try and clarify also. Brian, you're saying that when you get through one, and what we have is two on our sheet, but what I heard you just say were two parts to get to the $208,000. There was a 90 some and then 110 or something like that. Is that right?
This is the first change order in its entirety that brings us over the contract
amount.
Right, so
you were keeping a running total. You started with 270 to the good on that first change order.
Correct.
Then the fluff layer A, fluff layer B added in 208.
Correct.
And so as far as you were concerned, it was a running total of you were still $60,000, $70,000 to the good as far as change orders were going.
Yes, because
and now we're at the point where change orders are costing us money.
Correct.
That is why you approached it the way that you did.
Correct.
Okay. I'm just trying to get clarification. Okay, so Supervisor Spiker, are you done at this point?
No, I support the resolution, but the procedure is...
Yep.
I think we're going to have to clarify something.
Right, and I guess I'm just asking that we continue the debate on the resolution itself, and then when we're done with that, we can move to the discussion of the process that we follow after that. So other discussion on the resolution. Supervisor Geary.
Thank you. The work's been done. We're going to have to pay it, even though we didn't authorize it. Some counties... The last part hasn't been done?
The part that adds the cost has not been done.
Oh, the $245,000? So we're still under going into today?
Correct.
Okay, we're not over unless we pass this resolution then.
Correct, but the other items come off the table as well, and we have to renegotiate those.
Oh, okay. Well, I think this one's probably a moot point. We've got to pass this, but I think Mr. Shepard should bring this up at the next department head meeting and then administratively report back how they're going to handle that in the future.
Thank you for that suggestion. Anything else on the resolution itself? Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do agree with Supervisor Ebert that it wouldn't hurt to have the $182,851 in the fiscal note, so I'd like to make a friendly amendment to put the total work that's going to exceed the contract work by $182,851. I like that in the fiscal note. Very simple.
So the motion is to amend the fiscal note to include the $182,851. Seconded by Supervisor Hampson. Any discussion on the amendment? Supervisor Spiker.
I don't oppose it, but it clearly says, whereas due to additional grading work, the additional work will exceed the original contract price by approximately $182,851. I don't have no problem you want to put it in the fiscal note. Maybe that's what this paragraph should have won.
So you'll be voting for the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Supervisor Veenstra. All those in favor of the amendment to insert the $182,851 into the fiscal note, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That carries unanimously. Now we're back on the amended resolution. Supervisor Veenstra.
I'm curious about whether the contaminated soils have all been removed from the old landfill, because I thought you said they were moved at first, and I thought I'd heard at another meeting that they were moved. And then now Section 4 says there needs to be grading work to remove contaminated soil. So I was confused about whether we're into this project or the work that forms the basis for this change order, really.
To try to clarify, there's two phases of the waste relocation. The first phase was done 2 years ago, and that contaminated soil has been removed. In this second phase, we did go down and remove a couple of feet of material, which we assumed would be enough because it was in the first phase. So we did remove that contaminated soil, but upon further investigation, it was not enough, and we have to remove more. Hopefully that clarifies it.
Did that answer your question, Supervisor Veenstra?
That extra part has not been removed.
Correct.
All right.
So we're on our third layer of contaminated soil.
All right. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the amended resolution? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Supervisor Erickson. Then I would ask that in the minutes we reflect Supervisor Geary's suggestion, which is that this issue of the process for getting approval on unbudgeted items be addressed at the department manager's meeting, and that Mr. O'Malley come back to us next month with practice on how that's going to be handled in the future. Supervisor Schrader.
When do they have this meeting? What day of the month?
I don't know. Department managers meet when, Geary?
We usually meet approximately the last week of the month. If I could elaborate a little bit more, though, that the county clearly has a process for handling unbudgeted matters. I think more of the issue here, although this is related on budget, I think more of the issue is approval of contract changes. I think that's, is that correct, Mr. Spiker? Okay.
So that should be part of the discussion?
Yes. As
not unbudgeted items necessarily, but amendments or adjustments to contracts?
Correct.
That have already, Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, maybe it's the same thing, but, you know, because we got this $29.5 million law enforcement addition, and I'm concerned that change orders are not made until after elected officials are real. Maybe you look at that as micromanaging, but I think it's really what we're here for. And it isn't just even some financial, maybe they're all financial, I don't know. Maybe and there is no non-financial change order, but, you know, there's also programs associated with that, programming and other types of things. So I think any change order, we got to think about the process, whether it's financial or otherwise.
So that will be included in the discussion, please. Brian.
There are non-financial change orders such as completion date. And, you know, I think all that should be part of the discussion.
Great. Is that it for you, Supervisor Spiker? Supervisor Paff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we adjourn today, I would like to request that the full board adjourn in honor of Tim Dinger. Tim was the Town of Onalaska administrator, and sadly, Tim died on Sunday evening at the age of 31. He was a remarkable man. He was hardworking. He was honest. He was highly intelligent. He was athletic. He played for Barry Alvarez and the Wisconsin Badger football team. But most importantly, Tim was a husband and he was a father. He was much too young when he died. He was only 31. He leaves his wife, Jen, and their two young children, a 6-year-old son and a 4-year-old daughter. The people of La Crosse County have lost a good public servant. And the people of Town of Onalaska have lost somebody that's going to be difficult to replace. I know on behalf of Vicki Burke and myself, you know, we looked at him to provide a lot of guidance and help when we were struggling through some issues. But while we've lost a good friend, Jen has lost her husband, and the 6-year-old boy has lost her father, and a 4-year-old girl has lost her father. And that's a pretty big loss. And so we can talk about politics, we can talk about partisan politics and work orders, but I think we also need to remember that there's real human beings and lives and families that are behind the people that do the job. So as we leave here today and go to our picnic, I ask that we share our thoughts for the family of Tim Dinger, who was 31 years old when he died. Thank you.
I would ask us to join Supervisor Paff in a moment of reflection, please. Thank you, Brad, very much for bringing those kind words to our attention. Supervisor Schrader.
I'd just like to add one more thing to that. Also, his death leaves the young family with no income. His wife will not have a job until this fall. So. And that is why they're asking for memorials, and I think would be this body's good graces to provide. So
maybe that's something that we can add to what we do as we are out at the picnic today. Is Jeff, maybe you can take lead, or Brad and Vicki, to take a collection and make sure that gets passed along. That would be great. Thank you. Any items for future agendas of this group? Supervisor Manti.
Yes, I have one. We watch in awe as the State Assembly can't decide what to do about a smoking ban. And we have local communities now being visited by advocates saying each community, each municipality ought to invoke their own ban. We end up with islands. I'd ask the county board to put it on their future agenda to talk about a countywide smoking ordinance.
Okay. Any other future agenda items? Supervisor Wood.
I would like to put the
role and responsibilities of county board supervisors on the agenda for a full educational
during a policy time. Planning meeting?
That would be fine. I think we've dealt with this issue for the past 4 years, and I think we do need to have a broader understanding of what our roles and responsibilities are.
Any other light, you know, maybe small future agenda items other than these large issues? Supervisor Schrader.
Is it time to adjourn? I move to do so if I... It is.
Moved by Supervisor Schrader to adjourn, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned with the thanks of the chair. Enjoy the picnic.